Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, joining you for episode number 53, broadcasting live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I hope that if you attended the Silver Snail Gathering on Friday, you thoroughly enjoyed it. I missed it because, as you may remember from last week, my kid was super sick. And because we share everything, I got super sick. And I adore him more than anything. And on the day that he started to feel much better, I had 102 fever. And so being in a house with a toddler and 102 fever when you're supposed to be at Roberta's celebrating the 25th anniversary of Slow Food was a big bummer, but I am all better. The bigger depression that I suffered was that that afternoon I was supposed to go to Tomahawk Salon right around the corner and get a much needed haircut, and I had to put it off for another week. And so I am on the mend. My kid is on the mend. We had a wonderful second birthday party for him last night in which he got a brand new child-size kitchen with stainless steel cookware, and he immediately knew what to do and said burgers and eggs and went to work cooking. And I was like, oh my God, my heart is swelling. I am so excited that this is my child, and he's just wonderful, and we kept him alive for 2 whole years. So mommy and daddy had some wine, and then we all went to bed and woke up feeling healthy and right as rain. So in the studio with me today is my guest who is celebrating the publication of his second book called Back Around the Table, QVC's resident foodie, David Venable. Hi, David.
Hello there. What a pleasure to be with you.
I'm so excited to have you here. I know of QVC dating back to my childhood best friend. Her parents had cable. And so she and her sister used to watch QVC. And like I've talked on the show before, that's how I learned how to write recipes, because we would watch Julia Child and we would furiously write down recipes.
Sure.
She would do the same thing watching QVC.
Like, oh, wow.
Earrings or what were those figurines called with the sad eyes? The snow babies or the...
Oh, yeah. That is going back a while.
Oh, she loved those things.
Oh, my gosh.
So tell me your life story for listeners who may not be familiar with QVC, may not know David Venable. Who are you and how did you come to be in the studio with me today?
Well, you are kind to have me today. Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be here. And what a fun place. And the restaurant is so cool. I had lunch here today, so that was fun. But my background in food really goes all the way back to my childhood, because I have loved to cook and eat for as long as I can remember. But after I graduated college in North Carolina 175 years ago, I ended up working in television news for about 6 years. And loved it and majored in that in college and really found that to be fulfilling. But I began to realize that my love was greater for television and live television. And QVC was doing just that, live 24/7, and really doing these fun things. I didn't know a lot about QVC before I got there. My mom watched a lot, bought me presents there for my birthday, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so what ended up happening is I began to explore it a bit and realized that there was a lot going on there that was really interesting and intriguing to me. So I sent a tape, and pretty quickly they called back and said, would you come on audition? And I thought, wow, I didn't think that would happen that quickly. So I came in, auditioned, and not long after that, through a pretty extensive interview process, they offered me a contract. And now 21 years later, here I am, you know. And so I think we can safely call it a marriage made in heaven. It was a leap of faith for me, kind of a real departure, or at least so I thought, from what I was doing. But, you know, so much of what I was doing in news was going out and being peppered with lots of information about stories and then coming back and picking out the most important parts and retelling it in a conversational way. And the same thing was happening on QVC. I was learning lots about products and then needing to pick out the most important parts and then being persuasive and presenting that in a conversational way. So it wasn't so different.
Who is coming to you with the products? Or is it inventors or entrepreneurs or business people? Like, how do you, how?
Yes, yes, and yes are the answers to all those questions. Yeah, there's a real mixture of people that bring their products to QVC, and we work with vendors and brands all over the country and really all over the world. So that's been really exciting. But in and through my time at QVC, back in 95, we began doing and selling gourmet food. And unique food items, things that weren't readily available in grocery stores and whatnot, to kind of differentiate our business from what was happening elsewhere. And I really kind of fell into that very naturally. I have a great love of food and a great passion for food, and that kind of spilled over to our viewer, and they began to kind of identify me as the food dude at QVC and that kind of thing. And so, and because cooking and food go hand in hand, that just seemed very natural. And I started hosting cooking shows, and we had a long time host of our In the Kitchen show, and he left the network in 2008. And because I had really kind of established myself as kind of his backup, it came time to name a replacement, and was so honored when they chose me and decided to rebrand the show In the Kitchen with David. So I'm not a chef. I'm a home cook, and I really feel like a pretty accomplished one. But at the same time, I'm learning right along with our viewer. We call our viewers foodies because I think gone are the days when the term foodie was only safe for those people that ate in sophisticated restaurants and ate food that you didn't understand or certainly couldn't pronounce. So it's one of those things where I think a foodie is someone who is passionate about great food and loves to share that passion with other people.
Sure.
And we celebrate that on In the Kitchen with David. But when QVC gave me the show, they said, we don't want you to host the same show that your predecessor did. We want you to put your handprint on it. And my predecessor was someone who was an accomplished chef and had done a lot of work in the culinary area. So I really wanted to approach this in a very different way and kind of connect with my viewer, my foodie, in a way that we would learn together. I'd bring in the celebrity chefs. We would learn together, and hopefully I would ask the questions they would ask if they were there. So it really has worked out and kind of blossomed into a wonderful celebration of great food with like-minded people. And now almost 6 years later, we're going strong with lots and lots of people watching every week.
And you had Fabio Viviani on.
Yes.
Right? He was recently on Sharp and Hot. I'm a big fan of his. So how many people are watching every week? Do you know?
Well, my show garners about 4.7 million viewers a week.
Wow.
So it's,
and it's live.
It is live.
So much like radio.
Anything can happen. It often does.
So give me some examples. What happens?
Well, you go to take something from the oven and you don't grasp it just right and it's hot and then suddenly things get dropped anything can happen on live television.
And you just roll with it?
And of course you roll with it. And I think that's what makes our channel so exciting. I think that's what makes the show so fun, because our viewer knows that anything can happen and often does, and they want to see how I react. They want to see how that is in real time, because when you tape something, it's easy to go back and fix it.
I want you to know that I say this with total love and respect, but there is an element of like camp to it. Do you find that? Like, you find yourself, I have seen the Tales from Home Shopping on The Soup with Joel McHale.
Of course.
And you can find these bits of like, it's just like things that go wrong. And I think it makes it so warm to home cooks and home viewers of anything.
Well, sure. And you know, those kinds of things, I think if you had a camera trained on you in whatever work that you do, invariably there would be funny moments you could pull out of context and you could show, and they would be really, really cute. And it would be one of those things that if we had cameras following us around all the time, those real life things happen. So when you set yourself up as a live television operation 24/7, those things are on display. But to your point, I think that's what makes it charming.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
that's what
absolutely.
Makes it relatable. And I think that's why people are coming back and watching in such big numbers.
So when you started at QVC, did you have to do the overnight shift? Were you on
the 2 a.m.? Yes. I worked my typical shift was midnight to 4 a.m.
Wow.
And I would do a 4-hour shift in the overnights 5 days a week.
And is it like any other job where you have to be 100% like enthused and enthusiastic to be there so that you can graduate out of that?
Well, of course, because you know the overnight area was where you are placed as a new host, so you can learn.
Yeah.
And then as you begin to show progress and that kind of thing and affinity for different categories, they begin to move you out of those time slots and into daytime and those kinds of things. And then you start falling into areas of expertise and interest. And for me, that was always cooking. And that was always food. So it was a great opportunity to kind of progress out of that part of learning my craft and then really kind of being able to zero in on the things that I feel passionately about.
Do you take live calls?
We do.
So what are some of the questions that people ask you?
Well, everything. I mean, it's so interesting. When you're selling a kitchen gadget, for example, they want to know what it's made of and can I put it in the dishwasher and can I peel potatoes with that apple peeler. They want to know all the kinds of things. And I really keep that and encourage that kind of interaction with our viewer, because I think that's how we build trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how we build viewership, because I think if people are coming and getting the answers to the questions that they really are concerned about, it stops being less about will they buy the product, but will they enjoy their time that they spend with us.
I recently bought a new slow cooker because I bought a lamb shoulder that was too big for the slow cooker that I had, and I didn't realize that until I call it containerology. Like, is the thing big enough to control the vessel, large enough for the thing?
And hard to conceptualize sometimes.
I am terrible at this. It turns out, like, if I have a pot of stock that I've made, how many quart containers I have to get out of the closet to contain the
stock?
That starts
sounding like math. I'm out.
Oh, it's I was a math teacher. It's
seriously
spatial,
okay.
Spatial reasoning. I have no basic arithmetic and spatial reasoning. I cannot do. Give me a quadratic equation, and I am fine.
Oh wow. Okay.
But I went to Target because I was going to purchase this. I needed it like then because
sure.
I had my lamb shoulder on the counter. And I wished that there was somebody in the aisle that I could have asked about the 7 different models of slow cooker that I needed, because they all, the size was right. And so that was kind of like my main check mark. But then there's all these buttons, and what do I need? And do I need the one that it seems like all of them now have a clip on it so that you can travel with your slow cooker?
Sure.
Which I'm not sure. I will do, like, I couldn't think of a time that I would do that necessarily. Like, it just wasn't off the top of my head. But I had listened to Leonard Lopate on WNYC, who is another public radio station in New York City, and
sure.
he has something called Foodie Fridays. And he had the expert on devices from America's Test Kitchen, and he came through the ether and said, you want one that switches itself to warming setting. So it'll cook for however many hours.
And then keep it nice and warm.
And then it keeps it warm. And I was like, oh. Wait, that's all I need. But if there was, like, if I could have called, like, a, you know, helpline right then, I absolutely would have done that.
Well, I'll tell you, I am spoiled now to go into a department store, because we work so hard at QVC to educate our viewer on what it is they're purchasing and try to answer all these kinds of questions and be there to demonstrate it live, so you get a really good summation of the item, so that when you go to place an order, you feel confident that you have learned what you need to know about it. I go into a store now, and finding someone that can help me first is a struggle, and then when I find them, they're not always completely knowledgeable about what I'm interested in.
Right.
So it's really kind of an interesting paradigm when you look at what we're doing on QVC and how it relates to brick and mortar retail. And sometimes, and no offense to our friends in brick and mortar retail, but sometimes those folks are not trained in a particular area. But you come in with a very particular want.
Right.
And so I think that's the thing that sets
us
apart.
And the poor kid who's, you know, earning maybe just above minimum wage doesn't know that I'm a chef, doesn't know that I'm a trained culinary instructor, like, doesn't know that that's what I do for a living, when I'm like, which slow cooker would you recommend? They're like, I don't know, that one's on sale.
that one's red.
Yeah, it's red. Or there's a Damask one that was very nice. I didn't end up going. I went with the classic stainless steel facade. But, yeah, it's just, to have that lifeline, I think, is really important. And I find that even with this radio show, like, people feel like they know me and they can ask me questions, and I get asked questions all the time. Do people stop you out and about?
They do, and it's interesting, because I'll be in an airport or somewhere in a public place, and someone will stop and say, you know, I had a question about the pressure cooker you had on the other night, and can I brown in that pressure cooker? And I'm like, well, it depends on which model we're talking about, and as soon as I realize which one they're talking about, I can usually give them some good advice and good direction.
Even though you're, like, standing in the airport and you're like, I just want to, like, get on my plane.
Just need to
go
catch my flight, but you know what? I don't want you to ruin your brisket. So, all right.
My husband and I talk about this a lot when we hear about someone in this era of fame coming fast for people, in, like, YouTube stardom or overnight, even if it's a 15-minute thing. But you have to be nice. Like, people expect you in real life to be nice, and you hear stories of people who are not nice. And I feel like that person doesn't have a right to not be nice yet. They are not yet Joan Rivers. They are not yet Julia Child. They are still in their, like, formative, is this fame thing going to stick? And it's just so nice to hear that you take the time to be like, let me help you. I'll give you my, you know, my 30 seconds if I can. And
well, you know, they always say that any kind of fame or notoriety that we garner is fleeting and a vapor. So I don't care really who you are and what level of, you know, stardom or fame that you've achieved. Being nice to everyone is so very important, and I think you just have to be who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you do live television, you're much like live radio. There's not a mask that you can wear, at least not for very long.
Well, radio, you don't have to actually dress up too much.
Well, that's true, but you know what? You're being yourself, and just listening to you introduce yourself and talk about the week that you've had with your little one and that kind of thing, I immediately feel like I know you better than I know a lot of people that I see on television reading the news, for example.
Yeah.
You know, it's we have a unique opportunity in a live setting to be able to be who we are, and to communicate that in a very real and genuine way. And if that's not genuine, it's pretty easy to see through that.
Right.
So I think that there's a big disconnect when you meet someone that you see live in any kind of forum, whether it be radio or television, and they're not the same person that you see on the air. There's a huge disconnect there.
Right.
And so it's always my hope that when people meet me in person, I am the same person that they see on television, because I try very hard to be that.
Yeah, and it comes through from me too. It's like you are exactly who you are,
your
energy.
Kind. Thank you.
Since we are live, we have to take a quick break. Will you stick around for the second half of the show?
I would love to. Thank you.
When you travel in a book I mentioned, don't forget your remote control. Experience destination, a book with a traveling soul.
You are listening to Down to Earth by Eric Maltz.
International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hey, my name is Betsy Andrews, executive editor of Savera Magazine, and I am hanging out at the coolest, most delicious place in the world, HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everyone. I am Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from the most delicious place on earth, Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joining me in the studio on his publication day of his new cookbook, Back Around the Table, is QVC's resident foodie, David Venable. Hi, David.
Hello there. Thanks again for having me.
I want to get to the cookbook, but before we do, I just want to ask you for a piece of mentorship advice.
Okay.
I have worked a little bit in television. I have had a taste of being on a set for hours, and I love it. I absolutely love it, and I really want to do more of that. And normal people can go onto LinkedIn or Indeed.com and Google search that they, you know, or search that they want a job as an accountant or a job as a line cook or a regular person job. I have not found anything for TV host when I type those things in. And I was wondering, what's the process by which, I mean, you said you made a tape and sent it in. What's the process by which someone pursues work in the television field? I'm in the New York area.
Well, in general, I think is what you're asking. How you kind of make that leap or make that change. I think it really begins with a lot of research in your area to see what jobs are available and what operations would be able to give you some kind of entry-level opportunity. I think for people who are already very comfortable in front of a microphone, you've already got half the battle taken care of, which is really so important. But you know what? When you add in the element of adding a camera to a microphone, then there's another layer that is something to be conscious of, because communicating with a camera is still communicating with people. And I think that if you're going to be successful on television, just as you are on radio, you have to be able to make that connection. But then there's also the added, you know, multitasking of, you know, being aware of the camera and the tally light and all the things that are buzzing around you, and lights become an issue, and then suddenly there's makeup involved and there's temperature and all the kinds of things that you need to be able to balance to be comfortable in those ways. So I would look for any opportunity where you can get in front of people, not just on a microphone, but really in front of people through public speaking, through if there are any public access television opportunities in your area. Those kinds of things are good ways to begin. And then just like any other job, kind of work your way in little by little.
Right.
And then those opportunities, as you grow and as you improve, tend to present themselves.
One of the things that you said before the break was that the importance of being nice that we were talking about. And Conan O'Brien, in his last episode on The Tonight Show, gave a really impassioned speech about the power of just being nice to everyone and how far that takes you. Like, just be yourself and just be really nice. And I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do
you
from this
do
point
that.
Forward.
Exactly.
So let's talk about Back Around the Table.
Well,
it is your publication day. Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel like a proud dad today.
Yeah. So this is book number two, right?
It is.
You had In the Kitchen with David first.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first book was Comfort Foods That Take You Home.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's a second comfort food book. But I really found out that after writing the first book and sat down and began thinking about the second book, there were still comfort food stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Because comfort food isn't really unique to any one region of the country. It's what we all grew up on. It's the food that our mom or dad or grandmother made for us that we always loved. And then when we came back home again, we'd hope that was the kind of dish that we would have. So I think that there were more stories to tell. But I also wanted to take some classic dishes and give them new and interesting spins. So in this book, there are 10 total chapters. Each chapter I like to call a mini cookbook. It could stand on its own because I explore comfort in just about every category, beginning with appetizers, right into brunch. There's a comfort drink chapter, comfort from the grill, the garden. There is a wonderful dessert chapter I'm particularly proud of. I love sweets. And then the family dinner chapter, because so much of the way I was raised was to understand and really appreciate and honor that time around the family dinner table.
What's your comfort food?
For me, mac and cheese. That's my signature dish. I mean, I'm the big kid who never grew up. I can eat it three times a day, you know, much to my mother's chagrin. She's always like, it's too much mac and cheese. What are you doing? I mean, every time whenever we were coming home and she'd say, honey, what do you want for dinner? And then she'd stop herself and say, wait, I know the answer. So, but I did three different versions of mac and cheese in this book. I did an appetizer with mac and cheese, the little fried mac and cheese bites. With cubed
ham.
So wait,
fried mac and cheese bites. So now we have the decadence of macaroni and cheese, and then you fry it.
But flash fry it. I don't spend a lot of time in the fryer with this one. I actually make the mac and cheese and press it into a casserole dish and refrigerate it so it sets up. Then roll it into little balls. It's got three cheeses and, of course, the cooked macaroni and then little diced ham, cubes of ham.
Mm.
And then I bread that with panko and then just quick flash fry it long enough to get it crispy on the outside and gooey on the inside.
That sounds
They're
incredible.
Great party appetizers.
My mouth literally just watered.
I know. It's a fun dish. I could talk about it all day. And then I have a chapter of lighter comfort food in the book. And so I did a baked version of mac and cheese, a lighter version, which is fine. But my really no calorie left behind, over the top mac and cheese is in the dinner chapter. But it's a stovetop recipe.
Oh, okay.
And it's not baked. And you can do it on the stovetop in 15 minutes. And it has five cheeses in it.
That's amazing. Yeah, my listeners know I have no room in my life for light diet foods. I am full fat, full calorie. I run like races.
You're very trim. Yeah, obviously, it's not catching up with you.
Because I need to eat. I need to give myself permission to eat whatever I want. Like for breakfast, I had a huge bowl of Chinese noodles and a brownie for breakfast. So,
good for you.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of everything in moderation, including moderation.
Yep,
so,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I will say I tell people that they can eat whatever they want. They just can't eat all of it all of the time, and
you've got to move.
Yeah. And you
have to get
move.
Out and exercise a
which
little.
Started with having a toddler who was trying to like plug everything into the outlets. I realized if I put him in a stroller and walked him, that was an hour I didn't have to worry about him electrocuting himself or somebody else.
That's a plus.
And then I built up to suddenly I was a runner. It was I entirely give him credit for that. Okay, so there's a chapter in here about pressure cookers, which you mentioned earlier about
yes.
people asking you questions. I will confess on the air, I have never used a pressure cooker, mostly because I'm a little bit scared of them, which I think is an archaic fear. And I'm wondering if you can bring me up to date away from the image of it exploding and a housewife holding a rolling pin's face. Like, that's
well,
what I'm seeing.
Well, let me tell you first, you're not alone.
Okay.
There are so many people who still feel the way you do about pressure cookers because we remember the ones that our moms and grandmas had with the whistling disc on top, and you were never allowed near it because it was dangerous
right.
and that kind of thing. But pressure cookers have come such a long way, and now they're digital and electric, and they're countertop models, not stovetop models. They still have stovetop pressure cookers. But the majority of the ones that we have on QVC are electric, and they set sell in huge numbers, because what we're able to demonstrate and help our viewer understand is that you can cook in a fraction of the time in a pressure cooker. You're going to cook with greater flavor because any of the spices you put in with that pot roast are going to be infused inside. So every single bite is going to have all that great
from the physical pressure. It's actually going to like push the flavors
forces its way into the meat. I have a recipe in the pressure cooker chapter for beef pot roast, and so you put some red wine in there, and you put your bay leaves and your other seasonings, and put salt and pepper, garlic, and whatnot. And then as that liquid heats up and the steam is created inside, it forces all those flavors in there. It also cooks so rapidly. You know, a pot roast, in my first cookbook, I had a braised version in the oven that takes 4.5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Which is the one that I'm familiar with.
Exactly. But, yeah. The one that I have in this book cooks in 40 minutes.
And you get the same softening of connective tissue,
same
tenderness.
It's an extraordinary amount of heat that's building up in there. And I think what's so exciting about that is it just really tenderizes the meat so nicely. And typically, you know, we think about cooking fast, we think about cooking in a microwave. And we know that many times that meat in a microwave doesn't match, because what ends up is it becomes rubbery and chewy and tough. It's quite the opposite in a pressure cooker. You maintain all the moisture, and you really get that wonderful, soft, tender, slow-cooked feeling, but in a fraction of the time.
And can it explode?
Not the new ones.
Okay.
In fact, the new ones you can't even open unless all the steam has escaped.
Okay.
There are 3 or 4 backup safety valves on the lids, and it's just an extraordinarily safe machine. And in this day and age, we wouldn't be able to sell something that wasn't completely and utterly safe.
Sure. So, I guess we do live in a litigious enough society that not everyone would be allowed to have something if they were exploding all over
the place. Well, let's just say you're too easily held accountable.
Right.
So it's important to make sure that you're doing things the right way.
All right. I am game. I am willing to give it a try. Actually, at the university that I teach at, one of my students has offered to bring pressure cooker in to deal with a tough piece of lamb and show me that he can do it in 40 minutes. So I think I might take him up on it.
Well, and in my pressure cooker chapter, I give a lot of tips on how to use the pressure cooker. And so you'll learn a little bit there as you read in the chapter. And then, as you mentioned, there's also a slow cooking chapter. So lots of wonderful, wonderful meals. And it just depends on how much time you have. I mean, there's sometimes when I love using my slow cooker because it just fills my house with that aroma that I think is so much a part. That sensory experience is so much a part of eating.
Yep. I mean, I got my new slow cooker. I did the lamb shoulder. And then by the afternoon, the whole house smelled like a holiday dinner. It was like... And literally, I just like put some, I had some mushroom stock from rehydrated shiitake mushrooms, some chicken stock I threw in there with the meat, a couple bay leaves, some thyme, and I just kind of like looked through the spice rack. That was all I wanted, put the lid on, and then 8 hours later, we had this beautiful smell. And I didn't start by searing anything, browning anything. I didn't do any of that. I just cut right to the slow cooker, and it worked.
I always say the slow cooker does the heavy lifting.
Yep.
You know, when life has you busy doing other things, the slow cooker is home quietly doing its job.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay, so if someone picks up this book today, because it's now available where books are sold, what should be their first dessert that they make out of it? Which one's your favorite?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many yummy ones in there. And I would probably say if you love cookies, there are peanut butter cup cookies in there that are really awesome. There's a salted caramel chocolate cake. I know you just found the page for that.
That photograph is so warming. Do you give instructions? Oh yeah, how to decorate the cake to get that beautiful top.
All in there. You actually drizzle lines of caramel sauce across the top and then take a skewer and feather it in the ganache. And it's just so nice and so simple. There's also a Snicker bar cheesecake in there that is crazy.
I love Snickers. We had to, oh yeah, here's that. I had to part ways. My son is allergic to peanuts.
Oh, no.
Which is something that I am like, my listeners know I am in mourning of peanuts. I'm also not 100% sold that this has actually happened. I mean, we had to go to the emergency room and get an EpiPen shot. But in my head, I'm like, my kid cannot possibly be allergic to
How
peanuts.
How is this possible?
How
when
is
we
this
were
possible?
Kids, was anyone allergic to peanuts?
No, and I've been like on a high horse about allergies and sensitivities. And I'm very like, I don't believe any of that. Because my parents were like, you pick yourself up by your bootstraps. There was no time for allergies when I was a kid.
Yeah, well, exactly. And well, there are also lemon cheesecake bars in the book.
Oh, beautiful.
So
perfect.
That's lovely.
No
there are blueberry cream cheese, mini pies.
Ice cream.
Oh, there's coconut cream pie. Lots and lots of yummy things in there. I think you'll find that'll be great.
One of the things that I really love about your acknowledgement section in this book, and also some of the things that I've read that you've written online, is how much credit you give your team for helping you be successful. So if you want to take some... Tell us about the people who help you raise up this brand that you have and they're
you know
so
what?
Successful.
I am so blessed and honored to work with a fantastic, passionate team at QVC. And... when I took over the show about 5 years ago, we began building this team, and it wasn't the team that it is today 5 years ago. We kind of built it incrementally. But as we added each new person to the team, everyone kind of understood that this was something special that we were creating. The show itself was not a new concept to QVC, but it was new with me and it was new with my approach. And I think that as everyone joined the team, they began to understand and appreciate that we were doing something very different. And we were connecting with our customer in a way that we had never done before, through Facebook and our live chats and our blogs and whatnot. So as each person came on the team, they understood that they were joining something that was important. They were joining something that was different and something that they truly wanted to be a part of. And I can tell you, one of the most collaborative meetings that we have is when we sit around and discuss the recipes that we'll do on the show. Because many of those are my ideas, but they're not all exclusively my ideas, because I've got a lot of really talented foodies on my team who love to cook and are love to be creative in the kitchen. So we really brainstorm some fun ideas and come up with some interesting themes for the show, and I think, and hopefully, some really yummy and delicious recipes.
When is the show on the air?
It's on the air every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. And every Sunday at noon Eastern. So it gives us an opportunity twice a week to connect with our foodies and to cook and have a big time and laugh and have a good time in the kitchen.
And do your happy dance that you're famous for.
Well, yes, that kind of happened pretty spontaneously a few years ago. And I was tasting something that was great and it truly just moved me. I just loved the food. And I said, wow, this just makes me want to dance. And I just kind of spun around in a circle. And then it kind of gave rise to something. And what's interesting is if I work with someone new and they don't quite understand how it all works, they'll look at me and say, well, David, do I get a happy dance? I was like, no. You can't ask for those. That's just going to happen.
Right. You know you've made it when you get a spontaneous happy dance. You can't force that.
You can't script them, you know, that kind of thing.
David Venable, thank you so much for coming on Sharp and Hot.
Well, my goodness, our time went so quickly. This has been a real joy.
I'm really glad that you came out to Bushwick.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
On next week's show, I have Alan Salkin, author of From Scratch, The Uncensored History of the Food Network. He's going to give us an inside look into what was happening on the early days of the Food Network when it was forming. Until then, everyone, keep playing with fire and knives.
Sharp and hot with Chef Family. Sharp and hot with Chef Family.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.